I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Rabona Podcast. This week we'll be reviewing Liverpool's magnificent victory over Manchester United. We will also be reviewing the superb Champions League draw, which has just taken place and which we're all very excited about. So I'm joined once again by Michael De Silva. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Musa.
And Ryan Hun.
Hello.
Let's get into it. Let's get right into it. Liverpool, before we get into the draw, because the draw is wonderful, but let's just get the Liverpool out of the way.
Oh, are you all right, mate?
Do you know what? I am all right, because to all Liverpool fans listening to this podcast, I want to say such a superbly balanced side. I said this, I think, before, that I feel that Liverpool are the almost a sort of Mauricio Pochettino Spurs, but with better resources and better squad balance. They just are perfectly balanced in attack and defence. The midfield is so robust, so many options. And we saw with Shaqiri come off the bench to score that they have wonderful depth. And they just, you know, they have astonishing intensity on the press. And they've managed to maintain, I think the addition of Naby Keita really helped, but they've managed to now maintain the intensity. They used to have so Brendan Rodgers, for half an hour, they'd go into the bursts. But now they can maintain that for like 70, 75 minutes. And that's the difference, I think.
Shaqiri was such an astute signing, I think. And not the obvious player that you would think would add some depth, some quality to Liverpool. But yeah, he fits that system perfectly. And just, you know, at a time when Mohamed Salah isn't quite hitting the heights of last season, Shaqiri's a guy that can come in and fill that role really well. So, but yeah, the thing that impressed me about Liverpool was the sheer intensity. They just swarmed United in the first 20 minutes. In fact, didn't they have 20 shots in the first 20 minutes? Not all of them were on target, but something like that. It's insane. To United's one, by the way.
Goodness.
That's quite scary, that first 20 minutes. If I was a United fan, I don't think I would have lasted 20 minutes. I would have turned it off.
Yeah.
It was relentless. It was absolutely relentless. And the thing was, from a Liverpool standpoint, I was a little bit worried that, like, if they didn't score in that first 20 minutes, it kind of reeked a little bit of Liverpool not taking advantage of their domination and then United nicking a 1-0 win.
Yeah.
And even though the goal came a little bit later in the first half, I think it was massive that Liverpool got it. After that first half, if they didn't go in, well, they went in level, but if they went in behind,
yeah,
that would have been
the whole time
terrible.
It was 1-1, I was thinking, yeah, Liverpool are going to be just so mad at themselves if they can't come away with a win here. Because typical United in some ways, that they're able to stick in a game that they haven't deserved to be in, you know, but... and with someone like Jesse Lingard, they're able to pounce and score when they really need a goal. And Alisson got away with a pretty bad mistake in that game. But yeah, Liverpool, impressive, top of the league again. And it's good to see City having some real competition this year.
Yeah, I think this Liverpool side is legit. I think a few years ago when they went close, they didn't have any European football that season. And they were so heavily reliant on that front three. Mm. It kind of dragged them forward, you know, it's like a front wheel drive. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Absolutely no.
But they had no depth. And as soon as European competition came back in, they struggled. They were defensively a little bit suspect as well. But now they've just, I mean, they've got the best, they've got the best defensive record in the league, or the second one behind City.
Right.
They've got the best one. Yeah. They've conceded seven all season, which is remarkable. We're almost at Christmas.
Yeah. I mean, since the PSG game, they've won four in the bounce.
Right.
Only conceded two goals.
And remember, in that time as well, Joe Gomez hasn't been there all the time. Trent Alexander-Arnold has been absent.
He missed
recently.
This weekend, yeah.
Yeah. And Mourinho praised Robertson as well, like how his engine. And he's got a lot of quality, Robertson, which, a bit like Shaqiri, another guy that was kind of plucked from relative obscurity in a way. I mean, Shaqiri had played for Bayern.
But... Ex-Bayern into Milan.
And Stoke.
No offence to Stoke listeners.
But yeah, like, not the obvious go-to signing for Liverpool, and someone who's proved himself, I think.
Then again, in terms of not the most obvious signing, I think the beauty of signing Shaqiri is he's a player who would not expect to start every week.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, to that extent. And he's someone who you look at and go, well, he's been in these other clubs. And it's not like Liverpool's a last chance saloon for him, but there's a sense of, I've really got to make it work when I go here next.
Yeah.
And he can slip seamlessly into a system. And I was talking to Harry Sethi on the Anfield Index podcast, I think, before this game. And he was saying, like, you know, what the kind of challenges here. And I was like, you know, it's a system. You take out Firmino, you take out Salah, and they bring somebody else in. And it's interchangeable at this point. You know, there's not really, and I think I predicted a 2-0 win, actually. So a 2-goal margin of victory for Liverpool. Just because they just feel like, even in a game of this importance, scale, they can now snuff out United. And I think, unfortunately, if United aren't careful, their rivalry with Liverpool is going to go the same way as the England-Germany football rivalry. They're not careful. They're really not careful.
Yeah, I mean, this Liverpool team, Joe Gomez doesn't play, and Lovren comes in, who was their first choice centre back in previous seasons. Or, you know, Henderson doesn't start, Milner doesn't start, and they bring in Fabinho and Keita, who, to be fair, although he was a great signing, he hasn't had a great season, Keita. He's not been outstanding by any means. That's just the difference now, where they aren't reliant on, you know, a world-class striker. It's much more balanced and collective, like you said, and interchangeable. If Firmino comes out of that team, or Mane comes out of that team, or Salah comes out of that team, you can even bring Daniel Sturridge in, who's,
right,
you know, scored a great goal at Chelsea and played well when he's come in, and Shaqiri as well. And that's the scary thing, I think, now. This is definitely the best Liverpool team I've seen for at least 20 years, I think.
29 years, I'd say.
Yeah, but there was periods of the early 90s when they didn't win the league, but they were still Liverpool, you know, and they. I think this is the most for real that I've seen them for a while.
Yeah, this is the most complete squad they've had.
I just got to shout out the 08-09 Liverpool team, because that team was one winger short.
That's a good shout, yeah.
Can I just say, team, I've always said that the failure of Benitez to sign Malouda was the game changer that season. If he'd bought Malouda, because he was really after him, and you could see him just being like, oh my, because he had Babel instead, I think, who was, you know, still a very good player, but Malouda just gives you the consistency every single week.
Yeah.
And the thing with Liverpool now is the consistency of these players. And it's funny, because Salah may not be... It's almost like sort of Lewis Hamilton with Mohamed Salah. Like, he's not as spectacular maybe as early era Hamilton, but he's ruthless.
Yeah.
He is ruthless. Like, his finishing is still brutal, and he's such a threat. You know, when Salah is playing, his movement and his ability to occupy the fullbacks, just open space, everyone. If you watch Liverpool, the way they were playing in that game, the amount of times they had room. Mm-hmm. The left wing overlap, because Salah just dominates the flank, and you see them playing the ball wider and wider. The amount of shots that opened up in the last 25 minutes, because he drags it, it's like a center of gravity, he drags to the right flank.
You know who was, you talk about creating space and opportunity. It was so good to see Fabinho come in and play such a big role for Liverpool. And for me, he was the man of the match in that game. He absolutely controlled the midfield. His pass for Mane's goal, the opener, was
delicious.
Just so nice. It was just absolutely perfect. There was only one place he had to put that ball, and he delivered it. And also, this is a guy who, for Monaco in the season that they reached the semi-finals of the Champions League, was absolutely crucial.
Yeah.
absolutely crucial to what they did. And it was a little bit surprising to me for the last 3 months to see him not really playing a part.
I think Klopp's got a plan for him, though. I think you saw it maybe with like the likes of Lucas Torreira when he came in, or Granit Xhaka or someone like that as well. There's like certain midfielders who are used to certain leagues, I think it's a really hard position to play, and especially when you're changing to the Premier League, which the pace of it can sometimes catch people off guard, especially if you're coming from something like Serie A.
Can I say the pace of it is interesting, and also maybe the kinds of runs that are being made towards you. Mm-hmm. You know, people growing up playing in a midfield two and playing box to box, and you've gone up in a midfield three, and there's a different type of pressing that you receive, a different type of pressure on the ball. Mm. You know, you come from a league with a midfield three where both teams are giving each other space to play football.
Yeah,
they always say in the Premier League you get more space to play than in the lower divisions, but that's in the context of the English game. You're playing in the Premier League and you've gone up in a 4-4-2, you're much more accustomed to being battered, pressed, 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And so it just takes a little bit of time, I think, just to work out what the passing lanes are. But once they adjust, they're great.
The one area I thought Liverpool might come unstuck with this season was their midfield, actually. I think you saw it in some key games this season, even against PSG last week. Napoli in the Champions League. There was basically nothing in midfield. For both sides, actually, when they went to chase the game. That was the only area where I thought was a little bit questionable in terms of like a real sustained title push.
Right.
But I think Klopp's got the balance, you know, and he's got people. I think we said it off air, you know, it kind of feels a little bit like it's now or never for Liverpool in terms of, not now or never, but everything's set for a really, really big title push.
The game against City is going to be, at the Etihad, is going to be massive. When is that?
It's 3rd of January. And they've got Arsenal, which probably won't be that hard a game, to be honest, at Anfield just before New Year. And before that, they've got Wolves and Newcastle, which, I mean, they've got a full week off this week, until Friday. They play Friday, which would be good for them, because one of the things that's started to happen is some injuries have started creeping in. They've got a pretty well-spaced festive calendar with Wolves and Newcastle before Arsenal and City, so they'll have time to rotate.
In terms of the title race and their fight with City, the thing that concerns me, I guess, a little bit, is that Guardiola seems to be keeping Kevin De Bruyne in reserve. It's almost like they've got a fifth gear or a sixth gear that they're just waiting to lock in.
Like they've got an eighth gear.
You sound like a truther. Yeah. You really think that De Bruyne is being kept back to wreak havoc on an unsuspecting
because he's recovering from a serious injury.
But Michael, it's funny you should say that, because is it not more a reflection on the incredible squad strength that they can just afford to let him recuperate, because they've got Gundogan. I mean, this is the wild thing. You get rid of De Bruyne, you bring in Bernardo Silva. You get rid of Bernardo Silva, you bring in, like, I mean, Fernandinho can rotate and play actually one of the eights if he has to. You bring in Phil Foden. I mean, my goodness.
City are winning games at the moment without De Bruyne, but it's not always going to be as easy as it is now. And when the Champions League comes back up, they're playing Schalke, which is a deceptively difficult game against a team that are gonna battle hard. De Bruyne, I think, is best to make sure he's 100%. And when he is, he's going to be a key asset to that team again. Like, he's going to raise their level another 5%. And what I'm saying is that it's going to take it, it could take them above the level that Liverpool are currently at.
Right, right.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that.
I think that in relation to De Bruyne, it's kind of crazy, actually, how good City have been without him. And I think there's a danger, it's almost easy to forget how good they are with him and how he makes everything tick. The ball just moves quicker. The players move more quickly. The types of goals they score. You know, it's funny that there's, I think Carl Anker mentioned, you can find him on Twitter at Ankerman, A-N-K-A-Man 616. Carl Anker mentioned he's really good at tweeting about City in particular, how they sort of have that sort of driven ball across the box, the 6-yard tap-in. You know, they do that all the time now, but De Bruyne kind of pioneered that. He was the guy that would drive the ball between the centre-back and the goalkeeper, that really difficult pass, and really was the inspiration for their counter-attacking moves. And I just feel like, there's something else I want to say about Guardiola as well. He's been someone who's moved on from clubs fairly quickly, and Klopp's done that too to an extent. I just wonder if these two managers have found clubs where they're happy to become part of the institution. And actually, we might see them both there for 7-8 years.
It's like interesting 10 years. That, yeah. Because, you know, Guardiola was at Bayern for 3 years and Barca for how long?
Four.
Yeah.
And Guardiola has never been at a club like City where you don't have senior players, ex-players in the media constantly getting at you. You don't have that kind of whole, you know, the blood feud with other clubs that's so draining. You're just being left alone with resources to tinker and make beautiful football.
Yeah.
And like, you know, Guido's basically like got his like, you know, expensive Meccano set and he's off tinkering away and he likes that. Klopp now and Guido don't have this natural animosity.
And I think also because City don't have the sense of history in the same way the clubs that Guardiola's been at, he's almost building that heritage himself right now.
Do you see what I mean? So this is almost the funny thing about now or never, funnily enough, it's like interesting, yes, but how do we define now? Because now could be the next 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
With this Klopp side, if we look at the age of who he's bringing through and the age of the players, this is not good news for United at all. The beautiful balance of the City squad and the Liverpool squads, but also the youth of these squads.
Yeah.
You compared Joe Gomez to Raphael Varane, right, a few weeks ago on the podcast.
At the start of the season.
And what a great shout that has actually been, because Joe Gomez has been outstanding and Varane's been pretty poor. And yeah, Joe Gomez's better. Level, it's actually, and you said that, you know, the development, the speed of development under Klopp is remarkable. For these players.
Klopp was at Dortmund for what, 6-7 seasons? But it really took him till the third season for it all to click.
Right.
And that was when they won the double. Yeah. First double in their history. Mm. And a Bundesliga record points total at the time before Bayern went and beat it.
It's weird because we were talking about this before, but I look at it and the more I thought about this, this Liverpool team feels quietly relentless in a way that I haven't seen. Mm. Like this Liverpool team, I think it's better than the Man City team. I think it's better. Do you know what I think it is? Do you know why I say that? Because there are problems that Man City have that I don't know they've solved. Mm. I think, for example, that the over-reliance on Fernandinho, not just in terms of the wear and tear on that player, but even the way they play out through him. Liverpool bullied Man City. Mm. The late stages of the Champions League really reveal. What's that great Warren Buffett quote? It's only when the tide goes out that we see who's been swimming naked. And look, and I'm just saying, this quote is... And I look at Man City and I look at what Liverpool did to them, the Champions League in the late stages, and they were brutal. They swarmed that midfield. And I just don't know if City have solved that level of problem in the late stages of the Champions
League. Klopp's often had this thing over Guardiola where it's like a hoodoo over him, you know? But and that stretches back to their time in Germany. But the thing that was holding back Liverpool last year, for example, was that consistency. You know, winning the games against the lower opposition. But Liverpool have ironed that out. And that's where I worry a little bit about, well, don't worry, because I'd like to see Liverpool win the Premier League above City. But this is where I think City could be undone a little bit.
I'm really glad that so far on this podcast, we've discussed Liverpool and we haven't discussed everything in the context of Manchester United in crisis.
Don't worry.
Because the narcissism of that, I think a lot of...
It's coming, Moose, don't worry.
In fact, it's coming right now.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
Oh, my goodness.
You spoke too soon. Before we do go on to Man United, I just want to kind of say that I think also the setup at Liverpool is more advantageous to Klopp than it was when he was at Dortmund, because he hasn't got the threat of another team in the league poaching their star players. There's no one at that Liverpool side who's going to go to Man City or to Manchester United, really.
Excellent point.
To Spurs or to Chelsea.
Right.
Since they've got rid of Coutinho, there's no one in that squad who is always linked with a move away or seems to want to go publicly. It seems to be really unified. And that was always a problem with Liverpool. You know, Torres wanted to go to Chelsea. Gerrard wanted to go to Chelsea at one point. Suarez went to Barcelona, et cetera, et cetera. Sterling went to Manchester City. Now, there's no one in that squad who would want to walk, I don't think.
Well, what's funny is that, and we'll get into this slightly later, but how poetic that Klopp, the Dragon Slayer, returns and play against Bayern in the Champions League. Mm. I mean, if he toppled them, that would just be... For him, maybe more of a master than he might care to admit. I don't know. I wonder.
He'd love to. There's nothing.
We'll get onto the draw.
We'll get onto that.
But yeah, United.
The elephant in the room.
can I be honest with both of you and everyone listening? I don't have any problem with discussing this stuff. I would just say that I never thought that I could see no deal Brexit in football form until I watched a lot of United this season. It's just, it's a no-deal Brexit watching this team. It's just, there's an absolute multiple organ failure. It's completely systemic. The degradation of squad quality is poor. There is no leadership in key areas. Not nowhere at all. There is leadership, but not in the key areas. Juan Mata's on the bench, even though he's superb normally at Anfield.
He stopped blogging as well, 2 weeks in a row now.
I mean, and David De Gea is no longer being a superman. He's just merely having a normal season, which is why these goals are going in. It's a disaster in all areas.
Do you think that United are going to be able to agree a deal before 29th of March with a new coach?
Oh, great shout. I love that. Nice segue. No, because I don't think... The problem with United is... Mourinho is the logical... If you had an AI, if you got an AI and fed in all the data, like, okay, look, or a Siri or Alexa, program me a football club where the owners don't care about football, where they don't understand it. The executive vice chairman thinks he can supervise, you know, player acquisition. When you get a manager who doesn't seem to enjoy the game, we get a squad of players who are badly balanced... It would come out with Jose Mourinho as the manager. So that's the guy you want to manage the team. It would give you the Glazers. It would give you Ed Woodward. An AI would literally. It's almost like this has been computer generated.
There are a few clubs that fall into that category. Not everything you just mentioned, but the desire to use a club as a vehicle to
systemic.
To
this is systemic
create,
dysfunction
to create cash, but not to create success.
But to this extent, this is different. This is the scale of the debt that has been loaded on United.
The thing that surprises me, disappoints me, I guess, about this whole thing is the sense of apathy at United. It's almost like, well, it is the way it is. I mean, where's the green and gold?
Because those people have been systematically silenced, like. United have tried to set up, like, you know, parallel clubs and protests. You know, they've really tried. And now United fans are staying away. And I think that's actually a really powerful form of protest to an extent, like for people to see on sort of the international TV screens, because I know that match day revenue is not the big thing, but just to see gaps in crowds is incredibly powerful. It's incredible because there are still people in United, in the club's infrastructure, who care so much about the club passionately. They may be outnumbered at the very top.
To be fair, I didn't know that. Are United fans staying away from Old Trafford?
Some are staying away. I mean, tickets are slow to sell for some of the Champions League games as well. Tickets that normally would be sold out really fast are not going so quick.
There was there was that famous email that went out for the Valencia game or something. There was still tickets available, but I'm home over Christmas and I looked at trying to get tickets for the Huddersfield game and they were pretty much sold out on Boxing Day. So I mean, if they can sell out Huddersfield.
They've probably figured out a formula of selling just enough tickets for it to fill the place.
And also, they had the same problem at Arsenal where season ticket holders stopped turning up. Yeah. So it would be the official attendance was sold out, but there'd actually be 15,000 people missing.
I went to a few of those games, yeah. I went to a few of them.
I don't know. I mean, I agree with everything you're saying about the ownership and stuff like that, but I think that fans could forgive, if you like, for want of a better term, a lot of the stuff that's going on off the field if there was some sense of cohesion on it, and there isn't. And that's the thing, it's that fans of football clubs, we've all done it to various degrees. We forgive very quickly if things are going all right on the football pitch. And the level of confusion that is around Manchester United at the moment is confusing.
Yeah, but you can't expect there to be cohesion on the pitch when behind it's chaos. The structure has to be there.
Yeah, but where is the chaos behind the scenes though? I mean, I know that they need an upgrade in structure. I know that they need to like modernise the football club, but Mourinho will hardly have any contact with the Glazers. So any of that side about the club getting sold or everything like that doesn't affect anything that he's doing in training. And I think the thing is that that's not a reason why Paul Pogba's on the bench for a Liverpool game.
I'm not saying it is. What I'm saying is, I mean, some might say it doesn't matter what goes on behind, if the play is great. But the reason why this upsets me the way United are playing is the cynicism of what we do on the pitch. It completely mirrors what's off the pitch. It's like it holds up a mirror to it. Like Mourinho's behaviour, like, you know, him being in charge of this club as a figurehead of United actually is the perfect manager for our times. Like the fearful, defensive, negative football, dragging your players in public, it's brutal. I was seeing Bobby Charlton in the crowd. So Bobby Charlton in the crowd was just like, is this what you did it for? You look at him going, he didn't want Mourinho there because this guy is not the guy that reflects us, but he does reflect us. And, you know, and getting into the on-pitch stuff, because I know that because the problem with United is so often we don't talk about the ownership. We just go straight to, Mourinho is this, Mourinho is that. Actually, Mourinho is a perfect expression of where the club's values are. Because if you want to bring in somebody that cares about football, you don't employ him. You know, who cares about more than just results. You don't employ someone like that, or you don't keep them in there if they show no signs of changing. And Mourinho hasn't changed. There's always talk about softening up. He hasn't. He's actually doubled down. Mm. And to get specific, Paul Pogba on the bench. I don't know what is going on with him personally. I don't know what has happened to him, but you look at Pogba and his whole demeanor. It's so strange. It's like watching a kind of, his aura is totally gone. You watch Pogba against Uruguay and the way he stood tall, and he was up against that superb midfield, Bentancur and Torreira. And he was magnificent. His stride, like, you know, his passes, his pass selection, his movement, his positioning. You look at him now and it's like, I'm not being funny. You know that slow run-up that I saw him do for the penalty? My heart just sank.
Mm.
My heart sank when I saw it because I was like, you wouldn't do that for France.
Mm.
There is something about Pogba when he plays for France compared to United, like the role that he takes in, the leadership role. You see him at United, it's so weird. It's like he regresses. It's like he came back to Old Trafford and all of a sudden, you know, back in the kind of place he doesn't enjoy being in. And it's almost like he regressed. Like even the decisions he makes, like, don't get me wrong, like it's a systemic problem at United. There's other things going. But just Pogba is an emblem of like how this team has lost its way. Pogba was getting the most simple passes wrong and the movement, the positioning. Like when he plays for France, some can say, well, better players around him. And I've made that argument as well to times. But it's also like about his own headspace, his conditioning. He just looks absolutely miserable.
This is kind of my point that I was making before. And it's like, you look at Manchester United lineup every week and you have no idea who's going to play, and not in a good way.
Right. No,
you know, not like, oh, there's a really interesting tactical tweak there to kind of counter something. With everything that's going on off the pitch, right? You'd hope, I'd imagine as a Manchester United fan, that there would be incremental things on the pitch that stabilized it in some way. Because this is Manchester United. Why is Ashley Young playing right back one week and then all of a sudden it's Valencia another week and then actually it's Diogo Dalo, or is he at left back? I don't know. Or actually maybe we'll put Scott McTominay as a centre back. There's no partnerships being built. Mourinho is not making it easier for himself or the team. He's making it harder, I think.
To an extent, is he, and I'm not a Mourinho fan, but is he trying to make a point that he wasn't backed in the transfer window, that he's running out of options? And if they had backed him, then he wouldn't have to play this player here or whatever.
I don't know. I can't figure it out.
I think the issue is that Mourinho he's a problem. There's no doubt about it. He's not the right man to guide United forward, but he's not the biggest problem at that club. He's not supported by Ed Woodward. I don't think Ed Woodward knows what he's doing. If you look at his background, I don't really know why he's in that job. And as Moussa said, the guys running the club don't even like the game. So for me, those things need to change before we start talking about what the problems are on the field.
A really good coach with modern coaching methods. If you gave Hasenhüttl that same squad, he'd make them look different.
Oh,
he'd
God.
Transform
yeah.
them. He'd transform
It's
them.
Interesting you mentioned Hasenhüttl, because after their win at the weekend, Charlie Austin came out and just openly said things weren't working under Mark Hughes. And the new coach has come in, he's got new ideas and we've all got energy again. You can imagine a lot of United players just turning on Mourinho the moment that he was fired and they brought in someone new.
The most painful thing in all of this has been the pity of my traditional enemies. The sympathy that we've received from so many fans.
That is almost like the biggest diss.
It's awful, yeah. It's
you
awful.
I mean?
Yeah.
Right, should we get you a cup of tea?
No, yeah, let's get me a cup of tea. Let's go for a break. And so we're back to discuss the superb UEFA Champions League draw. And I want to quote the great sports writer Hugh McIlvany here, who once said, "A Champions League draw so sizzling it should have been made with an oven glove." And this isn't.
I like
so
it.
Does he mean the ball should have been drawn whilst wearing an oven mitt?
He means the draw was so hot. It was like, wow, it was sizzling. Okay, it would have burnt your hands.
As opposed to the balls being refrigerated.
Yeah.
Do you know what?
I'm going to set a timer. We're going to do 2 minutes max on each draw, each tie.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, let's go.
Let's
three.
Route through
and
each one.
And I'll just say next.
Awesome.
When the 2 minutes is up. So let's get go. Ready. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Three, two, one, go.
First, Schalke Man City. Oh my goodness. That is a bad tie for City. That
Lieber God. That's what I would say about
Lieber
that.
Lieber God.
I think City will have to break them down. Like Schalke know how to defend. But yeah. I mean, for me, the main thing that stands out is Leroy Sané. Back where it all began.
The homecoming.
That could be nice for him.
Big test for Tedesco. But I think he would probably prefer a game like this as opposed to one where they would be expected to win.
Do you know what's good for Schalke?
Which is where Schalke have struggled this year. Exactly.
Schalke just had that derby against Dortmund, which they narrowly lost. Yeah. But that was a tight game and it needed Sancho, you know, Sancho corner. It needed Sancho to bring something out of the bag, very special to win that. So Schalke, I think this is the first leg is home. It's in Germany. It's 60,000 fans in the Ruhr going wild. City are not going to fancy that.
I mean, ultimately, City will probably prevail, but the Champions League has almost liberated Schalke this season. You know, it's been an escape from their Bundesliga woes, and you know they've come through like two games against Lokomotiv Moscow. They've won 1-0, and they know how to grind out these results. But Tedesco, I think I agree that a big game is perhaps more suited to them.
And also, I think that the way that he likes to manage Schalke, I think actually will cause City some problems.
Yeah.
And I'm really hyped about this one.
I think also Guardiola away from home in the Champions League has actually a fairly poor record considering the quality of his, the quality of his teams and the amount that he's won over the years. So yeah, that'll be a really fascinating tie, I think.
Yeah.
Schalke City.
Yeah.
Big fan of that one. Next up, Atletico Madrid, Juventus.
Oh.
That is beautiful.
Oh.
That is beautiful.
That is going to be so full of shithousery. It's going to be unbelievable. I think the ball's going to be in play for about 20 minutes combined in those two legs, I think.
Yeah. I think the Antichrist himself put that in his calendar. I mean, he's not going anywhere for those two legs.
He's staying in for that one.
He's like, oh yes, the manifestation of my id in Champions League football, Atleti Juventus. It's glorious.
Who's going to win?
What, the bar fights or the?
I think Evo are going to do it.
I think Atletico.
I think one of them will do it.
You've got the casting vote, Musa.
I just think it's so funny how Ronaldo cannot escape Atletico Madrid. And I think this is the perfect opportunity for them to snuff the life out of Juve. I just think that what I love about Atletico Madrid is it's the brutal efficiency of it all. They played Dortmund, I think. They had like 32% possession at home and they beat them 2-0. I just snuffed them out. Mm. And they're only 3 points, I think, off the lead of La Liga, and they haven't been that good in terms of their start.
Yeah.
And they're still clicking. So I just think they're going to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it could be a tough one for Juve. I think Atletico, they know how to grind out these kind of wins, even against opposition as good as Juve. But Juve has struggled a bit. So,
I'm with Atletico.
It's going to be
unbelievable or absolutely awful and unbearable.
Beautiful in both cases.
Yeah.
There's a savage beauty to. I'm just licking my lips at it because you've got so many players. I mean, you know, Juve, these teams are so alike in their brutal efficiency. They could almost walk into the wrong dressing rooms and think they were playing. Like if Bentancur put on a Madrid, Atletico Madrid shirt, he'd be completely at home at it. Like, do you know what I mean? How many Atleti players could easily play for Juve and vice versa?
Sorry to cut you off, but next. That's not 2 minutes.
I'm just so excited by that. Next tie.
Oh,
United PSG.
You know what? I don't think that's a bad draw for Man United. I think from of all the quote unquote big teams that they could have got, I think PSG are not a bad shout. I think over two legs, if United are going to have any chance of going through against a group winner, I think PSG was a handy one to get.
I disagree. I think the only chance United had was against Porto. I think PSG are very strong under Tuchel, and I think they are serious contenders to win this thing this year.
Yeah, I also agree.
They nearly screwed it up. That's true, by losing at Liverpool. But there's no disgrace there. They recovered quite well from that, and
very well.
For me, I think PSG are one of the teams to watch in this tournament.
They were brilliant against Liverpool in Paris. The way they broke. The speed of the transitions, the efficiency of the transitions, 1-2 touch, Mbappe is going to be brutal in those wide positions against our fullbacks.
Yeah, I think it could be a hiding for United.
And they've really sorted out their midfield. Marquinhos and Verratti, the balance they have now. Mm. I mean, they're a dangerous.
I could see United running them close at Old Trafford, but
over
two legs.
You know what this is going to be like this time? It's going to be like Man U Bayern. Where Danny Welbeck was still there. Yeah. And surprisingly close. It'd be like, imagine we'll put up a spirited resistance. Yeah. I say we might lose like 3-1 on aggregate. It'll be a closer loss on aggregate than we think.
Yeah, but also, I mean, Tuchel is still, you know, a little bit of a not a rookie, but not a massively experienced Champions League manager.
Right.
Mourinho is a wily old Champions League fox.
Yeah.
And PSG are still fairly new to going deep in the Champions League. So that's my point about that, is that I think PSG are unbelievable, and I think Tuchel has done an amazing job this season.
Yeah.
It's just that something about that matchup, I think Mourinho will take, like you said, apart from Porto.
Yeah. Spurs, Dortmund. Ooh, Michael.
Oh, man. I had a feeling we were going to get them. Can we not have a Sancho corner that week?
I would have to.
I think that's going to be the best Sancho corner of the season.
Oh, no.
With Jade on the cast.
After his hat-trick and two assists and a 5-0 win at Spurs' brand new stadium.
Oh, my goodness.
It's going to be a great game. I think, yeah. I think Dortmund are probably the favourites to go through. They've been relentless this season and absolutely superb. Part of the reason they're doing so well is Bayern's downfall. Let's not forget that. But I think Spurs have their hands full there. Could be a very attacking couple of games, though. I was at Dortmund last year when Spurs beat them. And it was a superb performance by Tottenham, a real kind of turning point, I think, in their development under Pochettino. But this is a Dortmund, a different Dortmund team, and Favre has taken them up a couple of levels. So
I feel a bit sorry for Spurs, because that's a really tough draw. That's a really brutal draw to get so early.
That first leg is going to be so key as well.
Last 16, Dortmund is... Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Dortmund will fancy their chances, and I would say that they're just about favourites, but definitely not going to be easy for
It's going to be a great tie, though.
Yeah, it should be. Really,
yeah, I mean, it's... I think, yeah, that first leg is so crucial for Spurs. I mean, that's a massive cliche, but that really, really is. If they, if Dortmund don't score,
and also they've got
that
their weaknesses,
would be an amazing result
Zagadou,
for Spurs.
That's true. Yeah,
they have their weaknesses at the back. They can be targeted.
I think Spurs will score like a couple of goals over the legs, at least a couple of goals.
I can see it being a really high, like a 5-all aggregate,
something like that. Yeah, like
time. Sorry,
5 seconds.
Sorry. Leon Barcelona. sorry. Oh, Leon Barcelona. Yeah, we're done. Leon Barcelona.
That's interesting. That one.
I like this draw.
The question is, will Nabil Fekir get away with kicking like he did in the last... I love Nabil Fekir, but I was like, this man is kicking a lot of people. CSK Moscow, is that, can they not see it because of the snow or something?
Naughty Nabil.
My man is kicking people. They're like, oh, no, he's not. No, he's actually doing it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, naughty. Naughty Nabil. But Leon Barcelona, Messi is... I don't know if you saw him against Levante.
I did.
The man was an absolute whirlwind, force of nature, spirit animal. What kind of reckless ruthlessness?
Fifth best player in the world. Unbelievable.
That
the pass
is fake
for
news.
The pass for the Suarez goal, the first one, was insane.
Did you see, you know, it's so funny when you see the assist for the Suarez goal for Messi, the three defenders are like, what the hell is he doing? Where's he kicking that?
Yeah.
They literally turn their heads.
Do you know what it reminded me of? This is a little bit of a pull, but do you remember when Pro Evo used to be called ISS?
Yes.
And there was this one thing where if you were running to, like, say, the right of the goal and you were trying to shoot across the goal as if you would normally shoot with your right foot, it would do it at an angle where the ball would just shoot at a right angle off, but your foot would go the normal way.
Yes.
And that's what that first assist looked like. Yeah. I was like, this is straight out of, like, ISS Pro 98.
No. How did he not sprain his ankle?
The thing about Barca this year, though, I think they're really hurt by the fact that Real Madrid have won the last three Champions League, and they have this like bit between their teeth.
Messi's gone full LeBron this season.
He has.
Just like, no one else is going to do it. I'm going to have to do this.
I fear for Leon a bit in this game. I don't think it will be a steamroll job, but I think Barca will come through relatively
easy. One's got kind of like 3-1 in Leon to Barcelona written all over it, and then, you know, just maybe Leon get the first goal and then it's
and then it becomes the Messi season.
Yeah. Right, next.
My goodness. Roma Porto. Can I just say,
oh, this is
the pre-match food alone.
This is the
you do that for the pre-match food alone.
This is the mustache twiddler of the whole
my
round
goodness.
I think.
Yeah. This is going to release its own clothing range. The creative collaborations is going to give rise to the poetry, the art. Roma Porto. I mean, it's just.
I'd quite like to go to
both
legs.
It even sounds nice.
Who was in Porto's group? I've kind of forgotten.
Schalke,
yeah.
They were the other one he went through.
So they haven't really.
It wasn't
tested
a massively strong group.
But yeah, they haven't really been tested.
Roma Porto.
I don't know.
It's just delicious, isn't it? Everything about it. It's just. That's just two great European football institutions, great clubs, great support, great atmosphere.
Yet it's the game of all of the games there that most people are going to skip past and say, oh, well, it's not...
But that's Roma's not, so good last time, you know, the way they knocked out Barca and just...
This might be the connoisseur's choice without sounding like an absolute idiot, but...
If you had to ask me to go home and away on any one, it'd be that one. Roma Porto's delicious, I think, as a tie.
Yeah, I am hyped about that one. Should we move on to the next one?
Yes, Ajax Real Madrid.
Straight out of 1971.
Oh my goodness, straight out of the mid-90s.
How many European Cups between those two?
15. Oh, wait, how many? 13 for Real, isn't it? And then 4 for Ajax, 17, is it?
17, wow. Goodness,
I think it's 17.
Blimey.
Oh, do
you know what, though? I hope this is more regular in a few years' time. I hope this is normal. You know, I hope, like, but maybe in the semi-finals, you know, Ajax, Real Madrid, semi-final of the European Cup. It's so right.
I think Ajax are going to win this. I really hope they do. I think Ajax are going to go through because they've got an incredible young team. So, so good. You know, they just put 3 goals past Bayern. Okay, they let in 3.
Do you know what's so funny? When Ajax Real Madrid got drawn out of the hat, you could sort of hear somewhere in the ether Johan Cruyff scribbling notes to hand down to the touchline. You can imagine Johan like on cloud nine. Hey, guys, look, the triangle. I mean, it's such a classic tie.
Absolutely. I really, really rate Ajax this season. I think a lot of the reason that the Netherlands are rising again is a lot to do with not just Ajax players, but players that have come from Ajax. And yeah, it's great to see them back. And I truly think
fresh off the back of an 8-0 win, which featured a Daily Blind hat trick at the weekend. And De Ligt winning golden boy.
Actually, can I throw something in, Michael? You've just further to your point there. In the same way that the Netherlands qualifying in such style for the finals of the UEFA Nations League, Wijnaldum emerging, you know, De Ligt is a golden boy. This tie is a real opportunity for Dutch football to be like, to make a statement.
Absolutely.
Quick shout for Tadic up front as well, by the way, who is having a lovely time in Amsterdam.
Listen, Tadic had a lot of fun against us on the left flank. I've never forgiven him for that, but I'm happy for him. My man Tadic.
But Dutch football is rising again and Ajax are at the forefront of that for sure.
Absolutely. This tie is just, it's exquisite. It's exquisite.
And finally,
Liverpool-Bayern. It's such a knee trembler. Listen,
this is the cheese plate after the 8-course meal, isn't it? It's just like, what? There's more, and it's great. Oh my god!
This is the pick of the games.
We're so well positioned. Listen. Can I just
so
say?
Many.
There are so many, but this is.
Can I say the
this
honor,
is something else?
The privilege of being a British citizen in Germany, to have 3 big British clubs coming to English clubs coming here to play these ties. We have to do some kind of like. We've got to
Road
do like
trip.
Some kind of back to 48-hour, like back to back, like just get the pizzas in and just, you know.
It's Liverpool Bayern. I think
Klopp's going to love that.
Yeah. It's Bayern are kind of, they're not back, but they've, you know, 6 games unbeaten at the moment. They seem to have turned the corner a little bit, but I think Liverpool are going to have too much for them.
This is a good time to play Bayern in Champions League. Like, you know, they're always a tough opposition. Don't get me wrong. They're Bayern at the same time. They have identifiable weaknesses. And Ajax, you know, really exposed them. And that 3-0 draw in the group stages.
Yeah.
Bayern were going for it. And Ajax, they punched some holes in the rear.
It's an absolutely crucial couple of games for Niko Kovac. Because if they go out, if Bayern lose that game and they don't win the Bundesliga, I cannot see how Kovac can stay. Again, it's a similar kind of issue to Mourinho at United, where I think the coach has been let down a bit by the infrastructure. But... I can't see that ending well for Kovac.
I just don't think Klopp has forgotten what happened at Wembley against Bayern when he was Dortmund manager.
No.
Borussia Dortmund should have won the Champions League that season.
Absolutely.
In my opinion. I think he was really hurt by that.
I mean, losing Götze because of the transfer and that whole thing. I mean,
he was injured as well, right? So he was sat on the bench in the final. Yeah.
The worst possible preparation for Champions League final. The biggest game of Klopp's career.
Klopp's record in finals isn't amazing. But I think there'll be a little bit extra in that tie from Klopp.
I think this is a moment as well. I think, you know, for the players to say we've arrived as a force, not just a challenging force when they destroyed City, but we are a front runner to win this whole thing. Let's make a statement.
I mean, let's get real as well. They kind of escaped from the group, really,
Yes.
You know, they left it way later than they should have done with that group. And they're gonna need another night like they did against Napoli.
Right.
And they had against Napoli at Anfield. And, you know, I mean, big European nights at Anfield.
Well,
there's not a lot of places that do it better. So.
And Liverpool do have a precedent for narrowly escaping the early stages and going on and building momentum. So, you know, they're as good a bet as anyone to lift the trophy.
Very true.
And that brings us to the end, I think, of this podcast, but not only this podcast, but this year of podcasts.
It's gone so quick.
It's already our 25th podcast.
25th.
This is our 25th podcast.
Can I just say, look, it's been an absolute joy, both of you.
Is this going to get emotional?
It is. I'm very emotional. Look, I honestly, I don't talk about this very much because, you know, I like to separate my personal and private lives. But if you'd said to me that I'd be enjoying talking football, analysing football so much this time a year ago, I wouldn't have necessarily agreed. And I think this podcast has given me it's revitalised my sort of approach to football, and I've loved it. And it's been great hearing from audience members. Thank you so much, all of you, for chipping in with your comments. And thank you, Michael and Ryan. It's been a real pleasure.
Musa. Good to hear, Musa.
If someone had told me a year ago that someone would let me talk about football once a week and record it, I would have been like, get out of here.
Yeah, it's been a real joy.
So thank you, Michael.
You're still on your probation, Ryan.
Hey, if I haven't proved my worth yet, considering I wasn't even allowed to talk when we started this podcast.
Listen, I just want to say to all listeners out there, we are only as good as our last hot takes. So,
yeah. As warm.
But joking aside, thank you so much for tuning all of you. Please tell a friend, tell an enemy.
Quick bit of housekeeping before we run.
Oh yeah, sure.
If you can, leave us a review and a rating on iTunes, please. We're starting to get a few more. I've noticed they're creeping up a little bit, and that will really help because we're going to do a little bit of a boost in the new year for the podcast. And if it looks like we have listeners, then maybe they'll bump us a little bit higher up the list.
Just create the illusion.
And also, I suppose just thanks to everyone who's been tuning in so far and helping us spread the word, and keep your feedback coming because it's nice to know that people are listening.
Please rate, please like. Yeah. Please subscribe.
My dad stopped texting me about the podcast, so I think we've lost a listener. So if we can replace it with a few.
Yeah. Absolutely. And just, I mean, I've said this before many times, but you can find us on all those platforms, the same handle, at RabonaMag. So Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all the same handle.
More stuff going up on the site.
Absolutely.
Loads of...
So much festive goodness. Have a fantastic festive season, each of you, wherever you're celebrating, whoever you're celebrating with, and we'll catch you the new year.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.